Would you like me to hand you some poetry?
Rob.
I can hand you some text.
Fair inspirer, please do.
There you are. Be Jason.
Be favorable, fates, and a fair sky smile on this expedition. Phoebus, I look cheerfully. The bark is under sail for a year's voyage, and a blessed gale be ever with it.
Hello, and welcome to the Beyond Shakespeare podcast, and today's special episode all about the Lord Mayor's Show, specifically the Lord Mayor's Show from 1621. Which we are reconstructing as a live event in Cheapside, London, on the 29th of October 2021, exactly 400 years after its original performance. The triumph is The Sun in Aries by Thomas Middleton. During this episode, you will hear some background recordings from site visits and rehearsals on the actual site of the performance at St Mary Le Bow's churchyard, just off Cheapside, a few yards away from where one of the pageants was originally performed, and also an interview with Professor Tracy Hill, author of Pageantry and Power, A Cultural History of the Early Modern Lord Mayor's Show, who has been with us all the way and who started the ball rolling on this show and made it happen. The recordings may be a little fragmentary. We won't necessarily always explain who people are. So without further ado, let's go to the dulcet tones of Professor Tracy Hill and myself, Robert Crichton, as we talk about the Lord Mayor's Show. Tracy, what was the early modern Lord Mayor's Show all about? I know what the modern one's all about. It's a thing that happens every year in November. It's usually the same every year in November, and the early modern one was always different, and in October. So why that?
It kind of operates on two levels, really. The kind of formal part of it was to mark the inauguration of the new Lord Mayor of London for his year's term of office. So in that respect, it was kind of quite a solemn, important ceremonial occasion. But it was also, of course, an enormous, great big free party. And that's probably, I think, in some ways, at least as important to think about it in that respect as it is to think about it as expressing some sort of important messages about the way the city saw itself. What critics have looked at over the last God knows how many years is primarily the sort of the involvement of dramatists in the production of the show, particularly people like Middleton and Munday and Hayward and Decker and so on. But actually, I think there's a lot more to it than that. There's a lot more involvement of artisans and creative professionals whose role was really, really, really important in the day and has been a bit overlooked ever since then.
Yeah, so it's usually on the 29th of October, unless it's a Sunday, in which case it's the 30th of October. And we've read them all so far for the on the YouTube channel. We've gone through all the surviving texts. We got texts from surviving texts from 1585 through to the 1630s. So they're always different. These playwrights are always creating new things, but they're also using old things as well. We sort of identified that, you know, there seems to be basic structures to what the pageants are, but then they build new and exciting things to go on them or around them, around various allegorical things. So what kind of creations are the playwrights coming up with each year, who's making them?
It gets more complex and more sophisticated through the period, really. If you look at the shows that George Peel was involved in, for instance, in the 1580s and early 90s, they're pretty minimalist, really, in terms of the pageantry. There's usually just one pageant device with processional stuff going on at the same time. By the time you get to the 20s and 30s, you've got usually upwards of 5, 6, or 7 pageant devices. Different sorts of themes, usually related to the livery company of the Lord Mayor or the Lord Mayor himself, or just some theme that the playwright and his collaborators have just plucked out of thin air, as in 1621, when Middleton, for reasons best known to himself, decided to theme it around the signs of the zodiac. But he didn't really, because they hardly mentioned it at all.
Yeah, so we've got each pageant seems to involve a certain number of animals, large and small, all sorts of different themes. We've got pageants happening on the water, as there's a water show of some description. We've got pageants happening on the land all over the place. So where does the procession sort of journey from and to, and what sort of the shape of the day?
They tended to set off really early in the morning from Guildhall, which is almost the centre of the city government, to catch the tide as much as anything else, I think. So they would process from Guildhall Yard down Lawrence Lane, which only partly survives now, across Cheapside, pausing on the way for sort of the Lord Mayor to be greeted with songs and music and so on, and make their way to the river. They would get on the barges at Three Cranes, which is still called Three Cranes, not that far from Cannon Street, where the Woolbrook River comes out, and then go to upriver to Westminster, where the formal oath swearing part of the day took place. Then they would come back on the barges, obviously tides are permitting, it might be later in the afternoon, and they would get off usually at St Paul's stairs, and then there would be an enormous amount of pageantry. The real meat of the occasion was in the last part of the day. All the way around St Paul's Churchyard, past the little conduit, down onto Cheapside. And then they would go to the Guildhall for a feast, and then they would come back to St Paul's for a sermon, and then there was usually a bit more pageantry just to finish things off and to escort the Lord Mayor back to his house. I imagine he was pretty knackered by then. So yeah, that was the kind of general structure of things.
Yeah, so the meat of everything sort of happens on Cheapside. So one end you've got St Paul's, the other end you've got the Guildhall, and along this major thoroughfare, all sorts of pageant devices, chariots, large animals, small animals, the occasional sheep, lynx, unicorn, camels, and people making speeches primarily to the Lord Mayor. There's music as well, there's noise, it's so much, even though there's this big visual element that everyone can enjoy, the actual speeches that we have are primarily designed to be spoken at the Lord Mayor and for the Lord Mayor's ears.
They are. There's a kind of a sort of creative fiction going on there that, you know, the Lord Mayor is the only recipient. Of course, you know, there was tens of thousands of people there watching probably. But the speeches may not have been heard all that well by the general crowd anyway. So they, you know, they would, their experience and the eyewitness accounts tell us this. It's very much more of kind of colour and noise, the music and the figures like the Green Men and so on are what people tended to notice. The minutiae of the speeches often passed them by because they simply couldn't hear a lot of what was being said. Many of the actors were children and their voices were obviously not as loud as those of adult actors.
And if you can listen in the background, you can hear the sounds of people warming up and preparing for something that's going to be a bit like a rehearsal. Primarily, this is our actors testing the space and also my testing the levels that I want to use when I have...
Oye! Oye! Oye!
Oh, I wish I'd opened my script before we started.
Welcome
to Cheapside and the Lord Mayor's Show of 1621, entitled...
The Sun in Aries by Thomas Middleton.
Woo. You've heard of him.
So let's talk specifically about 1621. So we've looked, as I say, online at all of the surviving texts, but we're attempting to recreate the pageant from 1621 by Thomas Middleton, The Sun in Aries. It's a pageant by an experienced pageant master, an experienced pageant master's team. What can you tell the audience about what it might have been originally before we talk about what it might be like today? Because we have a text which is not necessarily complete in any stretch of the imagination. What can you tell us about 1621?
As you say, Middleton was really very much at the kind of height of his powers in terms of both drama and pageantry. This is the year of the changeling, after all. And he'd also very recently, just the year before, been given the role of a city chronologer, a kind of formal salaried role, and he was expected to do sort of PR exercises for the City of London as required. He's collaborating with Garrett Christmas, who is one of the best known and best, you know, one of the most able carvers and designers of the day. So they are the A-team in terms of the pageantry of the occasion. The event itself, as you say, you know, we know a certain amount about it because Middleton's pamphlet does preserve at least the speeches, but he's not always very clear about where things happen. You sometimes have to piece it together a little bit. And Middleton's syntax, as many of you will know, is not always the most helpful. He tends not to say very much at all about the kind of water show dimension of the occasion, which was actually quite important and but it's not something Middleton was necessarily directly involved with at all. So it's a kind of a case of using a bit of creative license to create something on the basis of this short pamphlet.
And here it comes!
And for the listeners at home, now that's the sound of someone carrying a sign in front
are
of
gathered
the
gathered outside event. The Guildhall waiting the
yeah, because the pamphlet is as much a sort of pitch document as well as a document of the event that actually happens. So Middleton and Christmas would have effectively gone to the livery company that year and pitched their idea, and other people may have been pitching as well. And what was the process for actually getting 1621 through?
Well, yes, quite often there would have been a kind of competitive process involved. In some cases, Anthony Mundy was really good at this because he didn't miss an opportunity. He would contact the livery company because it was an open secret in the city who was going to be the next Lord Mayor, even though technically that person wasn't elected into office until late September. So you find people approaching the company saying, I can do you an absolutely stonking series of pageants here, and most importantly, I can do them for say £160 or £180. And the competitors are saying, "Oh, we'll do it for £200." The companies often haggled. There's usually quite a process of exchange going on in their minute books, explaining how they made the process of selection. What they don't do, unfortunately, is say to us, "Well, we really like the sound of that pageant show." You know, you don't get that sort of aesthetic engagement with it at that point. But they've certainly always got an eye to how much they're going to get for the money.
Sorry, I'm
occasionally,
yes.
It's humans acting
yep.
in a space.
I know, it's so exciting. We get to stand and shout. It's so, like, it's, this is new. This hasn't happened in 3 years. Sorry.
Shouting in the mornings, who knew?
So you stopped us there.
So Thomas Middleton working with Christmas to create the images for the Sun in Aries. We briefly talked about what we don't have. We don't really have any details of the water show, but we do have all the speeches from the main pageants. We've got a fair amount of description, which isn't always entirely clear what it means. And I say a selection of pageants. We have a Tower of Virtue upon which we have fame, and we also have a personification of the new standard, the standard being a bit of street furniture on Cheapside that is being rebuilt that last year or so, who gets to talk about how great they now look. So there's all these personifications of things or classical figures like Jason of the Argonauts fame who are wandering about, and what thoughts have we got about what's actually going on in this pageant?
Well, you've got a combination of devices which are intended to refer to the livery company, the Lord Mayor, which is the drapers on this occasion. So you've got Jason and his golden fleece, which I guess the drapers probably would have expected to see, the fleece being, a reference to the cloth trade that they were involved in. But you also have the figure of fame, who's often mentioned in relation to, the fame of the Lord Mayor will live on beyond his term of office, that kind of thing. But in this particular occasion, there's a real special relevance to it because the standard, which is a sort of combination of a water conduit and a site of proclamations, which had a figure of fame on its top, bearing her trumpet, had recently been re-edified. So this is actually brought into play in one of the pageant devices quite directly.
And that figure of fame is sort of the central core of what we're trying to recreate. It's where our initial seed funding came from to actually recreate a little bit of the Tower of Virtue of fame and the standard there, albeit in a relatively truncated, small-scale version. I'd love to say we had the budget that Christmas had in the original Lord Mayor show and the amount of ongoing stage machinery that would have been available to them. But we do have a cast. We do have some actors. We have some young performers as well as an adult as well, partly to test the acoustics and see how much could be heard by people, as well as some lovely musicians to help transition everything along. Our primary aim is to create something that's vaguely comprehensible as well to a modern audience who don't have the context of everything. We can't do a long procession, so everything has to be pointing at a single stage where the various bits of text from the various different pageants will be performed.
Do they speak from over there, though?
Yes, fame goes back in the tower during the song.
Excellent.
We were just having this discussion about that it is marked in the script. I just didn't say it out loud because I missed it.
That's okay.
Well, we are trying very much to give a really rich flavour of what the occasion would have likely to have been like. And I think we mustn't lose sight of the fact this is literally the first time in 400 years these speeches have been delivered in the City of London. And that is a kind of really special question for me. But I think it's a special kind of moment for everybody, really. You know, it's very rare for anyone to be able to see these early modern texts in performance like this. But, you know, we have had to actually, of course, accommodate the fact that it's modern performance, it's a modern environment. We can't get in a time machine and go back to 1621, no matter how much we want to. And people wouldn't necessarily be so familiar with, well, wouldn't be at all familiar with 16th and 17th century pageantry. So we've had to do a bit more explication of what people are seeing and what it signifies than obviously they would have done on the day. But hopefully we've got the balance right and we haven't done so much of that it just becomes, you know, and here's this and here's this and here's this. But the people watching can actually absorb the pageantry in its own terms.
We haven't interfered with any of the actual text itself. We've left that all pretty much exactly as writ. And we also have wonderful music from Pasimezzo, who will be interspersing the event with various tunes from approximately the time, some of which actually explain what happens in a Lord Mayor show, probably better than we're able to do with using people standing on a stage explaining what actually happens in a Lord Mayor show.
Yes, the music is going to be a fabulous addition to the event, really. I mean, we didn't expect to have such remarkable, you know, contemporary music being performed on the day. So that's hopefully will not just make it much more pleasant to listen to, but also will kind of punctuate and explain what's going on in perhaps, as you say, a more subtle way than us just saying, and here's what's happening.
Triumph, the Tower of Virtue, or the Brazen Tower. The walls are brass. The pyramids, crenellations, a fine gold. Integrity keeps the keys. Virtue being indeed as a brazen wall to a city or commonwealth, and to illustrate the prosperity it brings to a kingdom. Upon the gilded battlements thereof.
So, that's what we're attempting to recreate on the 29th of October, 2021, 400 years after its original and originally only planned as a single performance. So, but we're doing it three times so that people have an opportunity to catch it at least once across the day. In some cases, people will be catching it several times a day because that's what people like to do when they've got some free time. It's the 29th of October. It's a Friday and we're starting at 12. And the show itself will last about 30 minutes, we said. We're trying to pull everything together online at the moment. This is very much a COVID event in the sense that we're all outdoors, trying to keep everyone safe and planning as much of it as we can online. So there's going to be a very interesting sense of how it's all going to come together on the day, which we're going to be pulling lots of performers from all over the country. In fact, in COVID willing from around the world. So it'll be very interesting to see how it all comes together. And we will be recording as much as we can for the podcast, so that there should be an audio version that will be available to listen to, as well as photos and videos and things that should punctuate this after the event. So if you can't make it in person, and we appreciate that that's quite hard these days, there will be something that you can catch up with. All the texts and resources are also available online. So just go to the website beyondshakespeare.org and anything you want, hopefully, will be there.
Performance-wise, that was nice. There was more of an acoustic than I thought there would be. I could hear a bounce, an echo,
yeah,
both from behind me and ahead of me. So it was echoing off that wall and then bouncing back off the church wall. So I got quite a lot back. The acoustic will, of course, be different when the square is full of bodies. Human bodies, especially wearing clothing, which we must assume that they will be, absorb sound.
In October, I imagine quite a lot as well.
It would take a very dedicated naturist, wouldn't it?
Yes.
I very much did enjoy that. Now, you envisage this text being spoken by a boy actor, yes?
That one, yes.
Now, we haven't spoken about perhaps one of the most important people in relation of the Lord Mayor's Show of 1621, or in fact many years before, and maybe a bit afterwards, I'm forgetting off the top of my head. We haven't talked about Thomas Middleton, a playwright, pretty much foremost playwright of his day at this time, the early 1620s. He's got a massive catalogue of dramatic writing, not an unsmall amount of other writing as well. So in a few minutes, could you just sum up everything about Thomas Middleton? That would be fab.
He's kind of becoming much more widely recognised as being such a significant figure on the early modern stage. But you know, he's fantastically adept at bridging any kind of divide between the state, the professional stage, and civic drama. He seems to be able to switch from one genre to another very, very kind of readily. You know, one minute he's writing The Changeling with Thomas Rowley, the next minute he's designing The Sun in Aries for Edward Barkham. So it shows great versatility, and he's also very outspoken. I mean, in some respects, he's not necessarily the ideal person to be doing this kind of PR work for the city, because he does like to make his views known about contemporary politics. But yeah, you get this sort of astringent quality to Middleton's works, which is absolutely marvellous.
Will I be able to say, I'm not saying anything about this pageant because I didn't like it?
No.
That wasn't Middleton in any case. That
was intense Middleton haters.
Yeah, no, that was more Monday, wasn't it?
No, Hayward. Wasn't it later?
Oh, Hayward. God,
Being like, I'm not saying anything about the next pageant. There were dancing sheep. It was terrible.
Oh, that bit, yeah.
Yeah, yes.
We are now starting to go deep into...
You need to have been there for our various online YouTube sessions where... We've read through all the pageant texts that survived prior to 1642, or at least the extant ones, and yeah, we have some issues with some of the later ones. Some of the later ones we have issues.
I can explain the joke if you would like.
No, it's fine. I'll probably cut all this out anyway.
That's fair.
This is just a little.
Thomas Hayward more or less takes over, and everything gets very dull.
Yeah, we're not huge fans of Thomas Hayward. I mean, I like to keep this a very positive podcast about various works that we do. But we do like Thomas Hayward as a playwright, generally speaking. Not always, but as a playwright works very well. But his Lord Mayor shows, the 1630s, we lost the will many, many times. Whereas we never really did with Middleton or any of his contemporaries at the time writing the pageants of the early 1600s are really, really nice and varied, actually. Now, there's always a bit of repetition going on.
Yeah. I do remember we really liked the one that John Taylor did in 1634. It's a one-off. He hadn't done any other than never did it again. Very long life, but that was a really fun one, actually. Remember that went down well.
Yeah.
And Anthony Mundy and his endless ramblings on about history was also good fun.
Yeah, but again, that's one of those cases where it's almost like the explication between stuff actually from the pageants was almost as much fun as the actual pageants themselves.
Yeah.
Anthony Mundy did spend an awful lot of time settling scores, sometimes with himself. and you just see him digging a hole deeper and deeper in his own material.
Oh, brilliant. And with Decker likes to show his workings, particularly in the first one he did in 1612. So, you know, he's you get a sense from the writer and from the producer that he himself is completely in awe about what he can do on this enormous stage.
Mm.
You know, he's kind of really excited about it. That really comes across really, even from the pageant book, it really comes across very well.
Mm.
That would be nice to do some Decker work, actually, you know, in real life, like we're doing in a couple of weeks' time. It would be fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, the nice thing about doing everything, even though we haven't technically done everything in terms of sort of wider civic pageantry or other pageantry that is available, we've still got a lot of royal entries and other things to do. But having at least covered all the surviving Lord Mayor Show texts, we've still got eyewitness accounts and things to look at and other material. It's that sense of a continuum of actually getting into what what you expect the event to be. So it's like, you know, in the UK, people going to Panto every year. They know what to expect from Panto every year, and that helps feed into the experience. You don't have to explain what it's going to be like every year. So if you're interested in coming along to see the show or listen along on the podcast, the more of these you get, the more of a sense of a continuum you get, which is really nice. And I'm really looking forward to when we get to reading more of Middleton's work, of actually feeding this into his work and the other playwright's work as well, of seeing how they're interacting with each other.
Yeah, it was quite marvellous watching the, hearing the Beyond Shakespeare gang reading a corpus of these works and sort of really just developing a massive taste for them, you know, coming at them almost completely cold in many cases and just going, wow, this stuff is really something. No, I've been banging the drum for the Civic Passion Troupe for so many years and people are finally starting to get it. And that's really exciting.
And that's one of our long-term aims is, you know, to keep coming back to these works, to create them in different ways. So obviously we're a podcast, so we'll be looking at doing audio adaptations. And we've got a whole slew of half-finished audio adaptations of some of the early ones that still haven't come out, but also thinking about what can be done visually, what can we create in terms of future videos and things that people can access in an interesting way and get a sense of that event. And so this recreation of the 1621, it's very much a first step. It's not we're just going to do 1621 and then stop. That's not the plan. I mean, you know, who knows what the universe will throw at us. But the idea is that we use this as a learning process to do more things and do them better. So hopefully you'll be along for the ride, listeners at home. And and we'll support our endeavours with your ears, if nothing else. Anything we should really mention at this point?
Just to come along and be prepared to get involved as well. You know, it's not mandatory, but the more audience participation we can muster, the better, really. It wants to be a kind of interactive experience as much as possible, really. You know, don't feel like, you know, just because you don't know anything about 17th century pageantry, you can't contribute, because anything goes, really, within legal limits.
Mm. Yes, that's one of the elements of, we don't know how many people are going to be there at this stage, but we're hoping that the audience will be able to make some noise to help recreate to some degree a 17th century audience who would be watching it. In a sense, the show might be a bit flat if we don't get an enthusiastic audience. So we're hoping for that, as well as all the other signs of life that one gets from a London street. So with all that in mind, that's a few weeks in our future, a few weeks in your future, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. If you're listening to this in the future, you can listen back to find out how it all went. If you're listening to this relatively speaking live in 2021, then you can look forward to what's coming next. All that remains is to thank Professor Tracy Hill for joining us once again to briefly chat about the Lord Mayor Show. I'm sure we'll be hearing more as we archive more of what we're doing on the sessions. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.
And in their right fames placed, they can instruct and guide thee, and each one that must adventure and are coming on to this great expedition, they will be cheerful and forward to encourage thee. And blessings fall in a most infinite sum, both on those past, thyself, and those to come.
Lovely. Excellent.
That is the first time that speech has been heard on this spot for 100 years.
Then I'm sorry about the line I flubbed.